Insights to Live By, the podcast, where we discover new pearls of wisdom to put into action and enrich the daily lives of others. Greetings and welcome to Insights to Live By. I am your host, Matt Zinman. Once again, thank you very much for being my guest. I am so glad you made it. Wow, I hope you are ready for a truly life-enriching episode, which, of course, is the core purpose of Insights to Live By. If you caught the last episode to be aware of spiders, I admit it was a little offbeat, but did say it would be onward and upward from here, and I am ready to deliver on that promise. Well, today is about pinpointing ways to ease daily living, which seems like a bullseye for life enrichment. This is also the episode in which I reveal what I wish my younger self knew. Have you ever thought about that question for yourself? I'm just going to put it out there. It is far from an easy answer. I am trying to think how this topic compares to what's planned for the future solo shows, which, you know, I'm clear about the next 15 episodes. And to me, in its own right, this appears to be the most practical. And I find it interesting how words are perceived. Like, when someone says practical, if you ask me, it doesn't quite rise to the level of excitement, which seems a little judgmental. So the key for this episode, well, is to remain open-minded and, of course, positive. Speaking of positive, I do hope you had the opportunity to enjoy this week's guest episode with none other than the most beloved mascot in all of sports, the Philly Fanatic, or at least his, quote, best friend, Tom Burgoyne. Now in his 32nd season, he has entertained over 60 million fans, none of whom have ever heard him speak, let alone see what he looks like. And Tom shared some truly amazing stories and how he's coping with baseball being back and the stands, sadly, being empty. In any case, be sure to check that one out. That said, let's get on with the show. You are now armed and ready to spot spiders and to spare yourself from getting caught in their deceptive webs. Hopefully, you are also emboldened by a fresh supply of earned confidence as an added advantage to overcome whatever challenges as they arise, namely to avoid the things that take you out of the present, like worry, anxiety, assumptions, resentments, and regrets. Remember, your goal is to maintain an amplified awareness by living in the moment and being proactive about practicing gratitude, embracing self-kindness, and experiencing true joy, all of which is at the heart of life enrichment. It's now time to consume a healthy dose of prevention to set the stage for what's to come. Life is full of obstacles. Many happen unexpectedly and often knock us off track and or off balance. We feel blindsided. Sometimes it seems like it's just one thing after another and we're just totally unable to catch a break. How can we stay on our game and advance the ball, so to speak, when we are being tackled from all sides? If it wasn't for one crisis or another, we'd almost surely reach the goal line. Any number of things can arise, and plenty of them are totally unavoidable. All we can do is deal with them. That's life. The ultimate question addresses how to get through each crisis, and especially not to make things worse. Other times, the reason why small problems become big ones is self-inflicted. Then there are the rest of the times. Here's a good approach to embrace moving forward. The best way to manage a problem, even a crisis, is to prevent it from happening. People often ask me about Z-isms being quips and quotes, which it really isn't, but if it were, this would be among the top ones. Really, take this to heart. Again, I think it's safe to say that preventing negative events is a foolproof solution. And this has less to do with straightforward problem solving, which applies to the present tense. To be clear, what we're addressing here is pre-problem solving by working backward from preventing potential problems. It also may seem natural to consider this topic in the same manner as what's commonly called contingency planning. But that's more about what someone would do to fully prepare for an event in case that event occurs. Like, think fire drill. What we're pinpointing here is total prevention. Can you think of everyday items and actions that involve preemptive measures? Let's go with seatbelts, phone cases, moisturizer, teeth brushing, hand sanitizer, sports equipment, dryer sheets, hard hats, smoke detectors, vitamins, hand washing, sunscreen, insect repellent, exercise, and other preventative health care, such as medical screenings. And while mammograms and colonoscopies unfortunately cannot prevent cancer, they can prevent that diagnosis from being made too late. If you came up with boots, umbrellas, and fire extinguishers, understand that those are contingency items that are meant to deal with an event that occurs, if only bad weather were preventable. What about habits and actions that are more unique to you? Here's one of mine that is a bit on the fringe. Get ready for some major personal transparency. I put petroleum jelly on my eyebrows when I play ice hockey. Why? Because it helps the sweat go around my eyes instead of in them while I'm skating. And do my teammates make fun of me? Well, not now that they've gotten it out of their system. Actually, I do still take some heat for it. But after all, we are talking about bringing that into a men's locker room. So suffice to say, true friends do keep you humble. But even still, I'd rather be weird and not care what my teammates think in favor of not having burning eyes that interrupt my gameplay. Now, how about we get ahead of undesired, preventable occurrences? And this is where we can pause and really confront ourselves and life's circumstances. First comes foresight. Can you identify something undesired that is going to occur if you do not stop it? What is your shortest line from A to B to prevent B from happening? This is different from how earned confidence prevents us from being drained by worrying about something that's uncertain to occur. This dose of prevention is about positive practices to look out for yourself and others. It takes present awareness combined with foresight and anticipation. As with many other topics we'll cover, it flat out takes practice. It then takes present actions to alter, avoid, and ultimately prevent undesired occurrences. Could it be something having to do with your spider senses kicking in? Start by taking inventory of the main happenings in your life and do some risk assessments. What is within your ability and free will to mindfully do or not do something that could possibly spare you and others the grief of allowing it to happen? Keep in mind and be kind to yourself, knowing that almost nothing is a mistake unless it happens twice. Give yourself a break by considering the first one to be a learning experience We're all far from perfect. Now that we've isolated what can only be described as flat-out mistakes, applied prevention cannot be overstated for taking whatever measures that can head off major problems. Here's where this topic is especially important for anyone in relationships and applying a dose of prevention when it comes to assumptive thinking. By, quote, cannot be overstated, I mean that it's too important to save ourselves from being in jeopardy of assumptive behavior becoming a relationship killer. This can involve having phantom arguments about false assumptions by one or both individuals. Again, why do that to one another or to yourself? As already mentioned, being together is about enriching one another's lives. This also goes well beyond relying on the logic of earned confidence to just deal with the real. Whenever any assumption comes into question, as with unsubstantiated events, we must consider an essential question. Is this something that is happening now or unquestionably certain to happen versus being an assumption in disguise? These issues relate to learned behaviors. It's easy to point out all of this about earned confidence, unnecessary worry, minimizing anxiety, and stopping oneself from making assumptions to avoid the angst in its wake. However, these phantom problems elevate in importance when it comes to preventing the derailment of a good thing with someone special before something goes very wrong. I've had this happen. Everyone seems to have that hot button when it comes to being accused of something they didn't do and being told by a loved one, I don't believe you, when they're telling the truth. That's an indication that there's a lack of trust that is degrading into contempt, which is often unrecoverable. These behaviors can also spill over into other relationships. People have residual emotional energy from their own experiences and pre-perceptions that factor into interactions with others. If you identify with these symptoms, you'll benefit by taking them head on. Now, to the how of it all. There's the time-tested approach of using some form of behavior modification to break the assumption habit. It doesn't need to be the typical example of snapping a rubber band on your wrist. Then again, if that appeals to you, feel free to make each snap sting based on your own judgment of how unnecessary your assumption is or the severity of any other behavior you are aiming to improve. Another practice is a reflection exercise, which comes into play once any self-contained life event or routine occurrence actually happens. In other words, you fail to prevent it. The ongoing question should be whether you can catch yourself in an assumption, though it's way too often after the fact. All of us are familiar with doing this. Hit the rewind button in much the same way as calling yourself out when something you worry about never happens. It's important to confront whether you unnecessarily put yourself or others through some level of negative experience and interaction only for things to turn out differently than what you eventually realize were false assumptions and/or preventable events. Think about it. How much energy did you expend based on any negative assumption? What could you have done to have prevented that event from happening? Again, confront yourself about prior assumptions being proven false so you can make fewer and less detrimental ones that you negatively impose on yourself and others. This point is somewhat a generality. It depends on the relationship, communication styles, and the seriousness of any given assumption. There also may be some opportunity for mitigation. Like, whenever you fail to avert something that's actually preventable, turn your attention to your fallback position to prevent further damage. Like, let's say a fight breaks out. Now the focus is to avoid rehashing the event with the person or people involved and doing whatever is necessary not to involve others. be respectful, not to bend a lot of others' ears unless it's absolutely necessary. All that does is perpetuate negativity and stress. Yes, I am once again reinforcing the personal responsibility I believe we all share to not unnecessarily impose our negative energy on one another. It really is a form of invisible assault. So let's get back to practicality. Have you come up with any examples of events you want to avoid and how to stay out of trouble? How about hiding a magnetic key under your car or doormat? Putting salt on a pre-storm sidewalk? Baby-proofing your home? Knowing and securing all of your passwords? Protecting your identity from being stolen? Changing your car's oil before the engine seizes? Placing solar shields on your windshield on a hot day? Taking out an insurance policy on anything? Or the all-important doing backups of your phone and computer? As an aside, for what it's worth, one exception to consider about these routine preventative measures is whether to buy warranties on consumer goods. It seems like everything comes with a premium offer to extend a warranty or insure an item. These can be expensive and are often part of some pushy salesperson trying to pad profits. Personally, I've found it makes sense to cover high-value items like phones and computers, but aside from those, I take a pass on every other offer. And the strategy is that while something may break at some point, it will cost less to replace than how much I saved not getting all the other warranties. So I guess that's my savvy consumer tip for the day. Other than that, as a general approach, when able, do yourself a favor and stop saying, "I'll get to it," before it's too late. One final word of caution that's literally for the road: make the decision to not allow yourself to text while the car is in motion. If you can't help but check your phone, wait for a stoplight. Lecture over. My apologies. I couldn't resist, mainly because I've had my own learning experience with this preventable risk. Another related example happened when I was 4 years old and is actually among my earliest memories. I found a can of bug spray lying on the floor of the garage, and I wanted to do a good deed for my mom by using it to clean her car tires. Like, come on, I was 4 at the time. But my skin absorbed some of the residue and I breathed in too many fumes. And my mom, unaware of why I fell ill, took me to our family doctor, who diagnosed my symptoms as typical. But she knew differently. Something was very wrong with her youngest child, and she rushed me to the emergency room. And by the time we arrived, I was in pretty bad shape. I will never forget bouncing on her shoulder as she ran down the corridor of the hospital and the ceiling lights flying by and my getting sick all over her. My fever shot up to 106 degrees, and they put me on ice to get it under control, which of course they did. But my mom trusted her instincts, and she saved my life that day. And personally, I would have preferred that spray can to have been kept in a safe place and out of my reach. So what's obviously obvious to say, but I'll say it anyway, is that if you have small children, it might help to take a fresh look around and cross-reference your baby-proof checklist. I'm just saying. Come to think of it, H4 actually was not my best year. There's actually a highly personal disclosure I've never made public until now. It happened at Ramblewood, an overnight camp in Maryland, which ironically made an exception to have an underage camper because my brothers and sister were supposed to be looking out for me. However, there was this poor animal that had been trapped, and it was being kept in a cage behind the cabins there. And I felt sorry for it and decided to feed it a leaf. Any guesses on what happened next? Well, rather than accept the leaf, this animal chose to turn around and spray me. That's right. If you guessed it was a skunk, then you're smarter than me, at least at that age. So there I was, bawling, running away as fast as I could. No one would come near me, to say the least. But one final reflection is that between leaf feeding and tire cleaning, you know, I was a pretty darn good kid. Also, come to think of it, my brothers and my sister kind of got their due for not looking out for me. I think that was a tomato bath, if I recall, though I'm not really sure they learned their lesson. All right, having said all that, it's time to take inventory. What undesired events could occur for which you can take precautions here and now to prevent? What's on your calendar, and do you have your bases covered? What other vulnerabilities come to mind? Make the effort to do these things now, and you may well save yourself a lot more hassle later. Let's go one extra step here by pulling back from everyday doses of prevention and look at the bigger picture. This is the one where we refer to life being too short and able to turn on a dime, as the sayings go. And this is somewhat abstract because it is so unique to each of us and involves big ticket items in the sphere of life. The example that comes to mind here is my decision to ride a motorcycle, as well as to wear a helmet. Now, the first decision was based on a conversation with my mom some years back, who was understandably not a fan of my riding. And that's what moms are for. But I made her a promise that I kept, which is that I would wait until I was at least 35 years old before getting a bike. And the reason was based on the logic that younger men often take greater risks, and I was no different. Agreeing not to ride a motorcycle was a sound decision. I wanted to be sure that I was mature enough to ride with my head on straight and not be reckless. And for what it's worth, I do stick to riding to backcountry roads, and I only ride when I'm mentally sharp. And yes, as a parent myself, I choose to wear a helmet. Prevention runs the gamut. It's one of the broadest topics to cover, and yet pinpoint distinct applications, all of which ultimately come down to our awareness and presence of mind. Here is where prevention intersects with mindfulness, which enables us to continuously solve problems by knowingly preventing them. As a brief aside, I'd like to reiterate the point that the simplest and best dose of prevention when interacting with others may be simple acts of kindness. What comes to mind here is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Or consider that you catch more flies with honey than vinegar. Like, we're in karma territory here. Again, timing matters a lot. One thought that comes to mind is with my wife Erica and her daughter Greta. And whenever Greta comes home from school, the odds are pretty good that she's on the tired and cranky side. And then there's Erica, who may be overeager to remind Greta to clean her room. And that's when I might remind my wife not to, quote, poke the bear. And that's in everyone's best interest to wait until after dinner for her to ask Greta about when she plans to straighten up her room. And this may seem like a minor example, but trust me, it's far from it. Like, fellow parents, are you with me on this? And Greta also appreciates that I sometimes run interference to avert an argument. These same principles apply when it comes to interpersonal dynamics. Prevention begins with being true to yourself. For instance, it involves being honest about knowing what you do not know, knowing what you know, and knowing what you think you know. This is about more than factual knowledge and personal experience. It also draws upon self-reflection and your ability to help others interact with you. Can you think of something about yourself that routinely you tell people to help them better understand you? For example, I sometimes admit to having man brain, which is to say that I am incapable of doing two things at once. I am hardwired. It is so pronounced that when I'm in a conversation with someone, I am not able to hear how I come across to them. I literally have to replay the words back to myself after the fact as if I said them to someone else in order to accurately hear the impression I'm making. And it's important to me for others to know this because I don't want anyone else to take offense if they perceive me as misspeaking or interpret my tone of voice in some way other than intended. A little self-deprecation goes a long way to instilling trust in others. And here's where poking fun at myself to disclose a personal fact is a dose of prevention. And then there are times when I say the wrong thing, having nothing to do with that limitation. We all make mistakes. Do you or do you not truly know yourself, your weaknesses, your limitations? Do you communicate those to others as a preventative measure? Now, go back to what you might say about yourself and how to turn that to your advantage when you explain it to others. Again, it's essential to rely on that humility to hedge that variability, especially when it comes to yielding to the greater expertise of others. In the workplace, you will earn more respect and influence because people will find you more believable when you do know what you were talking about or know what you were doing. It's also respectable to admit when you simply don't know something being asked of you and that you'll find the answers and get back to them. Another consideration for earning influence in the eyes of others is how abundantly you place their interests above your own. Helping others to be successful has a boomerang effect. Pour kindness and belief into others and grow together. Being authentic and nurturing relationships goes a long way in preventing problems and creating opportunities. Keep in mind that genuine kindness is exclusive of practicality, meaning while you may know this is important in terms of being kind and having that motive, don't be kind because of that motive. Be kind because you're selfless. And this is where you may have heard the terms servant leader and go-giver. Another facet of prevention I feel compelled to address is for those entering the workforce in what we call the real world. And this is also for my fellow college parents. It's about the importance for students to take charge of their career and life destiny and succeed despite the huge blind spots of our education experience. And this is a core life priority that's close to my heart and for which I've worked extremely hard for many years to have the insight and expertise to help others. And there are some essential points to put this topic into context. The first is how high schools put students at a disadvantage because their education focuses on teaching how to test well. And this is not to overlook the importance of having good grades to get into college, but by and large, K through 12 schools also do not sufficiently expose students to career pathways or provide enough practical training to succeed in the workplace, nor do they build the life skills to become self-sufficient. For the increasingly few who make it to college, they're still conditioned to focus on their GPA instead of switch gears to acquire employable skills. Don't get me wrong, getting good grades still matters. However, today's college education typically remains exclusively academic and neglects experiential learning. In other words, no one is making students get the work and life experience to develop practical skills such as interpersonal communication, productivity, professionalism, critical thinking, and emotional intelligence. The point is that students come out of high school without fully understanding their options to choose a job or career, without an accurate measure of their work skills and aptitudes, and without adequate personal reflection to align potential interests with life pursuits. Many of them then go through college with a limited sense of direction and exposure to their potential field of choice, only to then graduate without landing on their feet or ever using their six-figure degree for which they incur decades of debt. All right. Now that that's out of my system, I admit to having some hard-earned concerns. I do a fair amount of speaking about related topics and often ask professionals how many of them ever use their college degree, and among those, who still do? And though I can't claim this to be formal research, it's been consistent. And at most, 25% have ever used their college degree, and no more than 15% still do. And that's a hidden epidemic. So I think you'll agree that these are incredibly significant issues in terms of most people's quality of life. In any case, prevention is about bucking the system by taking charge as early and as often as possible to get and stay on the right track. As you might expect, let's go with the example of finding the right internship to make yourself more employable or to secure the ideal job to provide for your family. And this too is a process that's often fraught with randomness. Most colleges do not provide internship placements, and many people find a job search to be like grasping at straws. The stakes are too high to be idle. There are little-known practical techniques one can follow that enable them to take charge of their career and life destiny. Then they must do what's necessary. And this approach draws upon my professional experience as a nonprofit founder and a free resource I developed as a public service of the Internship Institute. It's a website at studentsteps.org that follows four seamless steps to help someone get from being lost to arriving where they belong. It starts with using LinkedIn for targeted introductions to request informational interviews, which are the springboard that can open multiple doors of opportunity. And for students, that leads to internships in which they can prove themselves, earn trust, and eventually secure a job offer. And this technique follows a similar pattern for new graduates and more experienced job seekers. And there's also a similar site at VetSteps, VETSteps.org, with resources, tools, and various training that are exclusive for veterans. Again, the key is that every step is in an individual's control. And I encourage you to have at it, go for it, and manifest your desired accomplishment, as well as invite you to invite others you think it would help to do the same. I've studied and experienced this for myself for many years and believe totally that these resources can help millions of people, employers, and employees time and time again. So whether you're in a transition to or from college, from active duty or otherwise, it is hope-instilling to know that it's within our personal control to take charge of our career and job pathways. Relevant enough to say, applying this level of prevention will go a long way to avoid the lifelong impact of blinking and having 10, 20, or even 40 years go by in some job or career that diminishes your professional satisfaction, human potential, and quality of life. Well, that got rather intense. The good news about being however far along in life than at the start of one's work life is that no matter however much anyone isn't where they belong, it's never too late to change course. More evident about the ripple effect when changing occupations is that it takes at least an equal factor and combination of high risk tolerance, understandable trepidation, and summoned bravery to see it through. Here we are in a pandemic with what, in many cases, poses extraordinary challenges. It may also present extraordinary opportunities. If the situation is about losing employment, then there may well be a way to pivot and leverage your career experience into a successful consulting practice. Or maybe it's to put some other plan B into place, such as a side hustle. It's a relief to know that we're not always entirely helpless to influence the all-important outcomes and related life experiences when it comes to certain big decisions, events, and transitions. Now, just to round things out, there's a very timely major life transition I continue to experience with my son Jake heading off to college. All of those years of parental guidance and preventative measures, mostly as a single dad, from baby-proofing, navigating the teens, they're all behind me. We've reached the point where my parental discretion is less advised, which means it's time to relinquish some of my role to positively affect Jake's life and well-being. Suddenly, it seems like there's a lot less I can prevent, as well as some dad pride and relief that some things are no longer in my hands. Naturally, as Jake headed off to school, I didn't pass up the opportunity to convey some parting words of advice to my son. It's my right, right? I did and do feel a responsibility to put however many preventative measures into place. I still want to have his back as he leaves the nest, as it were. It's also important to make some precautionary suggestions, hoping that the rest of the world is ready for him to be fully engaged in it. I followed through this time by writing a letter, knowing that my ability and influence to proactively shape his life is, however, less. I also realized that this represents what I wish my 19-year-old self knew. No slight to my dad, but I did not receive this kind of advice. And so, with no further ado, I am about to read my personal letter to Jake verbatim, presented on the day his mom and I dropped him off and finished setting up his dorm room. Of course, with this disclosure being more than my own, I do have Jake's approval to share this with you. Jaker, miss me yet? Okay, grant me some parting advice. 1. Turn the page. This is the beginning of one of your life's greatest chapters. Whatever hang-ups you have had about the past, leave them behind. If you change nothing, then nothing can change. Reinvent yourself. Seriously, Jake, you deserve it. Believe that and just let go. 2. Treat yourself right. Be kind. Whenever you get those thoughts running through your head that put yourself down or self-doubts, take charge and tell them to piss off. In kind, you'll also have a lot to feel good about. Focus on being proud of yourself and grateful overall. I know you find this especially hard. All the more reason to fight back and be your own admirer. 3. Expect the best. Decide what you want and go for it. Whatever you let or make yourself expect to happen is that much more likely to follow suit. You'll need to work at this just the same as hitting the gym, maybe even harder. Working out will help a lot with this too. I only want the best for you and to make the most of your college days, but that's still up to you. 4. Force yourself into your discomfort zone. Now's your chance. Get out of your room, join some clubs you like, and some that stretch you. Besides any sports, consider checking out ones like sports nutrition, athletic training, or even photography. Whatever it is, meet more people. If you don't like a club or whatever, then you'll know it's not for you. 5. Choose your tribe well. No need to rush or be overeager. Aside from clubs, do whatever it takes to get to know a lot of people, especially in the first 2 to 3 weeks. Spread yourself around with multiple groups instead of sticking with too small of a pack too soon. You know, your dorm room mate, that's a good start. Let others be a good influence on you and in kind, be a good influence and a true friend. There's no need to force it or try too hard. Just be yourself. Listen more than you talk. You are the average sum of your five closest friends. You have 17,000 plus options. 6, play hard to get. Resist the temptation to commit to joining a fraternity. No matter how much peer pressure, keep your options open, including not to join one at all. I'm sorry, but the brothers thing is overrated. It also cuts you off from other friendships and relationships. A lot of girls won't date frat guys because they don't want to label themselves. You also attach yourself to some knuckleheads wearing the same letters. And there's a way to be a chameleon. Make friends with those in multiple organizations and keep your options open. Maybe decide mid-sophomore year. Be hard to get, but not be gotten. The answer in the meantime is, I'm not sure it's for me, at least not yet. 7, play it cool. Meet girls, but don't get a rep. It's still a small school. It will be great to meet someone you really like, but don't lose yourself in them. Be your own man. 8, don't be that guy. Have fun, but you don't need to win a competition to obliterate yourself and be the biggest clown in the room. You can gain more respect and a good rep in other ways. Make good decisions. 9, find your groove. Aside from classes, create and stick to a routine. Set your alarm and other alerts. Use up your meal plan. Commit to workouts. Stay in motion. 10, obligatory academic comments. Do your best. School comes first. Stay in touch with your advisor. Talk to students in majors that interest you. Get to know and rely on your professors. 11, stay in touch. Along with your life entering a new phase, so is our relationship. Whenever we make time to connect, let's make it count. It would be great for us to really enjoy sharing about one another's adventures and stay connected. I am always here to listen and never too far away to be there for you. I love you more than words can express. Dad. If you have yet to figure it out, I do have a few soft spots. That letter covered a lot of ground. The challenge with highlighting everything is that it highlights nothing. If there's any central point I continue to reinforce, it's to, quote, make good choices, which is said half-kidding without kidding. That's the mantra I hope can be a stopgap in the moments that matter most, if you know what I mean. I'm always open to more advice from my fellow college parents. While on the subject, it's not beyond me to hold up the mirror and look back at myself just the same. What are the preventative measures I missed realizing? In other words, what could I have done better raising my son? I'm not perfect. Well, parents, here's what I think it is. Whenever they ask for your help, ask yourself whether they're capable of figuring it out. Then follow through by telling them to go figure things out for themselves instead. It's crucial to know when to do a little less or not make things too easy for our kids. What they need are the life skills and self-reliance to thrive without parents. With Jake less in the picture, I still have my share of fun with Erica and Greta. I do what I can to be the best dad and husband, including when it comes to looking out for them. And it's safe to say that I do rely on certain, shall we say, approaches to keep them out of trouble and or at least save them and myself some of the challenges. This all has less to do with being controlling or anything as much as about what I assume to be my roles and responsibilities in life, including to apply some preventative measures for the greater good, not the least of which, in this case, being my own. Anticipating, mitigating, and minimizing unwanted events takes a certain degree of proactive planning and precaution. And as we wind down here, one obvious topic that seemed best to leave until the end, as well as to make the last and lasting impression, is a dose of prevention in the age of COVID. And I feel responsible to touch on this, and we'll keep it brief. There's no way around the fact that we're in a pandemic. Some places are more of a concern. It's understandable we all suffer from some level of COVID fatigue, but the reality is what it is. And with that includes the loss of our rightful freedoms. The bottom line is that this comes down to science and sensible precautions. Wear a mask and physically distance when sensible. Certain masks are better than others. Hand washing is another inconvenience and easy to skip, but still necessary. This is really a life and death issue, or at least can severely impact our health and quality of life. Hopefully a vaccine is forthcoming and we'll overcome this. And then there's the legitimate sadness and depression and grief. It's really important to take this head on and be proactive about finding and doing more things that bring us joy and keep our spirits up. I mean, previous generations have lived through a lot worse and life got better again. There's a lot to this topic of prevention, whether it's avoiding false assumptions, relying on kindness towards others, or staying clear of bug spray and skunks. Just remember to proceed at your own risk. Well now, I surely hope you found that to be a healthy dose and heard some things that help make life just a little better. And that said, it would be great to have you join me for next week's guest episode about finding your calling in my interview with Genevieve Petoro, author of a new book about how to transform your life, embrace the human connection, and lead with meaning. She also represents the very first thing I have in common with Oprah, who also interviewed Genevieve, and that segment has been among the most rerun Oprah shows of all time. So I am really looking forward to sharing that with you. And next week's solo show explores the topic of perception and how it literally shapes our world. This is yet another aspect that's paramount to life enrichment, and what can I say, is a not-to-be-missed episode. After all, who knows what else you might miss if your perception is anything less than optimal. All right, that does it for me. Thank you sincerely for listening in. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Insights to Live By. Be sure to connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Matthew Zinman and join our community at insightstoliveby.com. Wishing you and yours an enriching day, and we'll see you next time.